Mini episode 1657 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1657. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris. And this is one of our favorite things to do is to talk football with this gentleman here. He is, of course, the scout, Ken Becks. You can find his work at firstdownscouting.com. That's the number one, stdownscouting.com. We're going to be taking a look back at week two in the NFL, weeks one and two, and just kind of seeing what kind of lessons we can draw. We did a week one recap with FDH Lounge dignitary Derek Joseph last week, and We don't get into these on a week-to-week basis throughout the season, but it did seem like there's been enough developments in the early part of the season that it would be worth revisiting this, and I wanted to get one of our favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries back in the mix. That would be Ken Becks. Scout, how you doing, my man? It is a pleasure to be back on with you. Nothing like talking football with you, buddy.
Well, you know, it's always fun talking football, but I tell you what, it's like Christmas and New Year's when I get to talk to Rick about football. I mean, where are you going to find two holidays put together? I mean, come on.
I love it, man. It's always a special occasion when me and you are breaking down the gridiron, and there is a lot to get into. And, of course, some of the biggest news coming out of NFL Week 2, it was the game most recent from when we were recording this now, and the Monday Nighter with the Browns and the Steelers. And what I'm going to say is an incredibly cheap hit by Minka Fitzpatrick on Nick Chubb. But again, season-ending injury for him there. And the Browns being a team that, as you and I talked about off air, were not looking sharp even before it happened. Deshaun Watson, his biggest problem maybe between the ears at this point, the whole thing with like the face mask penalties last night, put his hands on a ref. He's got a problem with where he puts his hands a lot of times, but he was lucky he didn't get flagged for that one with the ref last night. That's supposed to be perhaps an ejection if you get caught doing that, and all these other things here, the sacks, the fumble, the INT. I know it was tipped, but I mean, he looked like hot garbage. Basically a lot like Josh Allen the previous week on Monday night against the Jets there. So this is one of these things where the Browns, to me, were looking like a top 10 team heading into the Monday Nighter, and then all of a sudden, I'm not sure anybody has taken a bigger tumble this week than the Browns with Nick Chubb going down, the foundational part of this offense. And now the Browns left to hope that this massive gamble that they took on Deshaun Watson somehow pays off. It hasn't been to this point, but it has to be for this season, not to be DOA, which I think it may very well be.
Yeah, when you speak of foundation, you're talking about Nick Chubb. And when he went down and went on for the season ending yesterday, Yeah, I'm not going to say it put the Browns on DOA, but they're going to have to get resuscitated. And the only guy that's going on the roster that's going to be able to do that is Deshaun Watson. And like you were mentioning, it just didn't look good with his sharpness as far as his timing, his processing. He's been here over a year now, so I can't give him that excuse no more. You know, all you can do as a Browns fan of FUR is hope the best. The defense in a positive light did look like a top five type playoff defense. They were aggressive. They were getting to the ball. They were making things happen. So in positive, I would say, you know, look forward to the defense. And I actually did like Jerome Ford, which was one of the guys that came out a couple years ago that I highlighted that they picked up. So, and he did look impressive in the few touches that they did allow him to get. So, like I say, all you can hope for is, you know, the defense stays strong like it is. Hope for some progression with Deshaun Watson and hope that Jerome Ford can come through and bring that running game, maybe not like Nick Chubb, but somewhat close to it. And you had some news. I remember you had brung off air about somebody they might be bringing back to the orange and white as a running back.
Yeah, I actually I read a little bit ago that as we speak, as we're taping this, apparently Kareem Hunt is in Berea. And so, again, you would have to think that that could be imminent as far as getting him back on the roster. The Browns have established that they've already got their new RB1, that Jerome is going to be in that spot there. So we'll have to see if that continues to be the case if they bring Hunt back. But what I want to talk about here, again, the overall sloppiness of the Browns, and one of these things of where they never do what they're supposed to do. I had a conversation a couple days ago with FDH Lounge original dignitary Chris Galloway. He was looking at some fantasy lineup choices for a flex spot here between Tyler Lockett, George Pickens, and Elijah Moore. And he's looking at it and he's going, now granted, he had had Austin Eckler, who was going to be out this week. So he figured he needed to swing for the fences. My pick out of the three was Tyler Lockett, and we see that that played out pretty well. Secondarily, my pick would have been Pickens, who got a touchdown. He was looking at it more because he's looking at it on paper. Like, well, especially with Amari Cooper being banged up, like, they should be trying to make big plays happen all night with Elijah Moore. And I said, okay, but the thing of it is, and this seems to be constant regime to regime, you look at the Browns and you say, in order to win, they need to do this. And then they never go out and do that. And here we saw it play out again last night, that Elijah Moore, should he have been the guy? Could he have been the guy that turned the entire game around? I'm not going to say that. But it's one of those things where the first pass of the freaking game is to Harrison Bryant, who was a little bit rusty, and it goes off his fingertips. It wasn't a well-thrown pass anyways. It's just like the Browns never do what they're supposed to do strategically in order to win. They've built this offense around Deshaun Watson. They've retooled it around what are supposed to be his strengths at this point. I'm not sure that his strengths from before are his strengths anymore, to be sure with that. But it's one of those things where, as far as whether it's the problem being between his ears or between Stefanski's ears, the constant with the Browns is that the problem is always between the ears of all the key players.
Well, two of the guys, they have the pieces to me, Rick. I mean, I'm looking at Njoku.
Yeah.
And then I'm looking at Elijah Moore, like you spoke of. And let's don't forget about the rookie, Cedric Tillman.
Yes.
I mean, he's not just, okay, look. To be honest with you, I don't. If you get through training camp, I don't want to hear about rookie anymore.
Sure,
you're on the 53 man. You know, you're a high rotate. You should be a high rotational guy,
right,
if you're not starting. And there's a reason we took you in the third round. I mean, that's a top 100 guy out of the entire college.
Yes,
that's not, you know. And I'm not looking to pick on individual players on the roster, but, I mean, like David Bell, like, what's he averaging, 5.8 a catch?
Basically, yeah.
I mean, what do we, you know, when we now, you know, I'd go into my evaluation mode. When we drafted him, I think we got him in the third, and he was rated like a fifth, sixth rounder for me.
Right, yeah.
So, I mean, you know, now look, I can't get mad at their draft picks. They've been doing well. But let's get back to what we were talking about. Let's utilize the talent that's on the field. And Elijah Moore, if you utilize him properly, he could be an X factor. You know, multiple positions. And then I'll even look at the special team situation. Why do you have Donovan Peoples-Jones doing the punt return? All he does is flag every, you know. What are we doing, Mike, here? We're not maximizing what we have here. And so when you have like a Nick Chubb go down, or you have a Deshaun Watson maybe not on his game all the way, then when you factor in that you're not utilizing all the talents and special, like Njoku.
Yeah.
Like, well, if he does a curl, an 8 to 10 yard curl, how are you going to defend that?
Yeah.
I mean, and then with his size and the way he can bunt, bowl over people, that could be a good yak situation. So I don't care if you're going against Pittsburgh, the Eagles, or who you're going against. The games always come down to players, not plays.
They do.
And you cannot tell me David Njoku, at least at an intermediate underneath, who's going to stop him as long as the ball is put in place within 8 to 12 yards. Come on, Rick.
Exactly. But, again, they have just failed over a period of time to go to him consistently and take advantage of what he can do. And that's the whole thing. You know, whether it be him, whether it be Donovan Peoples-Jones, year after year after year, even Harrison Bryant, who won the John Mackey Award in college. I mean,
right.
It's one of these things where, you know, when you're a rookie, potential is a great word. When you're 3-4 years into the league, potential is a curse because it means you haven't done it yet. And these guys haven't done it yet. And you got to, Njoku, that goes back to, lest we forget, 2017. He's been here a while. So that's one of those things where, it just, if you haven't done it by now, you're probably not going to, which kind of sums up where the Browns are at. And it's interesting because of the ripple effects on the entire AFC when compared with the Jets last week, losing Aaron Rodgers early on. Being the jerk that I am, I texted FDH Lounge dignitary and Sportsology proprietor Russ Cohen, who was a Jets fan, and I texted and I said, what was your favorite part of the Aaron Rodgers era in New York? But that's all done. And so now you look at this, it looked like a surplus of playoff teams in the AFC at the beginning of the year. But you take the Jets and the Browns off the board, and now you could be looking at a garbage team like the Steelers, a fraud like the Steelers that can't even move the ball consistently offensively, a team like New England where, again, most of their strength is on defense, clearly, looking at them. One of these other teams, the inconsistent Chargers, who are 0-2, maybe the hot seat isn't as hot for Brandon Staley right now, the Bengals being at 0-2. I see some ripple effects up and down the line here. Because the Jets and the Browns being off the board, I think makes it a lot easier for any of the teams in the AFC right now that are struggling to work through some things. Potentially even Buffalo, which has been working through a Josh Allen regression for potentially some time now, depending on how you look at it.
Right. Well, I mean, just going over the 2 weeks so far, the one team I got an eye on, and I haven't, in full disclosure, looked at a lot of their game film, but the Dolphins being 2-0, that could be, that could be a problem looking forward as long as they can, at least go .500 the next 6 to 7, 8 games.
Yeah.
That could be a problem, for the AFC itself. And then you look at, who was it? The Chargers. You bring up the Chargers. Now, they're a team that, at what point are we going to start questioning Herbert?
Yeah. Good question.
I'll tell you what. There's no question in my mind that he's a top five talent. But Rick, once again, just like you said, that 3 to 5 year range.
Yeah.
After a while, now there can be circumstances. There's always the outside parameters from time to time. But you got to look at least from an offensive situation. He has the tools.
Yeah,
I mean he's got the running back usually from year to year. He's got above average wide receiver situation. Normally has a good tight end, and when you have an above talent at running back that can do both pass and pass catch, at some point when are we going to start pointing the finger at Herbert?
Well, and that's an interesting thing because.
Which is kind of sacrilegious, by the way, for me, because I love him as a talent, Rick.
Well, I'm going to make a comparison here in a moment, not necessarily his style or anything like that, but I got a couple of things to bring up here, and all of these are things that are not necessarily X's and O's things, but just kind of like weird commonalities, I guess we'll file it under. Like, the Chargers, they seem to abide by this sort of unwritten code in L.A. the last couple of years of, that most L.A. teams must be stars and scrubs. The Rams were like a superfied version of stars and scrubs when they won the Super Bowl. The Rams kind of never stopped being stars and scrubs. They just overcame it. The Lakers spent much of the last couple of years that way. The Angels are always stars and scrubs. The Dodgers this year are a little more stars and scrubs, but they're overcoming it. The Chargers, that roster always looks a little thinner to me than it does to other people. So that's part of it right there. But I will say this about Herbert, and again, and this is not exactly a scientific X's and O's thing either that I'm going to say, but in looking at it, Dan Fouts, Philip Rivers, we're no stranger to seeing this roster having guys that are regular season superstars, and then the playoffs come around and just the job doesn't get done. So it's like this is the third time with this franchise since the late 70s that we've seen this. That's a lot.
Well, and then, you know, you have to look at it this way. Everybody has that 2 to 5 year window, you know? And so, you know, nobody's getting any younger, either on offense or defense. I mean, you got Bosa, and, you know, he got his contract, what, like, I guess a couple of years. You got the wide receivers. I mean, who was it, Williams and Keenan Allen? I mean, he's not getting any younger.
Right.
So, I mean, if it doesn't happen this year, you're going to have to be in somewhat of a pre, I wouldn't say rebuild, but, you know, build as you go. Yeah. You know, you're going to, some of them veterans are going to have to get traded, or you're going to have to let them go. So if Herbert doesn't do it this year, you know, and look at Austin Eckler.
Yeah.
We don't know after this year what's going to be going on with him because of the contract situation. I don't see that squabble going away.
Right.
So if you're a Chargers fan, you almost better hope this might be the year that you, if you don't make it all the way, you better give a strong push, because I see they're going to have to retool after this year.
Well, and again, you talk about truth is stranger than fiction. The three quarterbacks that I mentioned for them historically, who's the only one to get them to a Super Bowl? Stan Humphries. Who would have believed that?
I know.
That's the guy out of those four, okay?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and I love Dan Fouts. Remember Don Coryell?
Yeah.
My goodness.
Oh, those were fun teams. Those were fun teams. But, yeah, like you said, too, Miami, I mean, they're looking as good and as explosive. And I've been a Dolphins honk from way back, so I'm loving this. So it's one of those things where, again, the only question is if Tua stays upright. But, I mean, if he does, if you tell me he stays upright, I'll tell you what. I think they're the team to beat in the AFC this year, because Fangio running the defense, and they're going to get the reinforcement in the secondary come December. So, you know, yeah, I think they're the team to beat if that is the case. If he stays healthy, if he stays upright, and if he's not healthy, if something happens, if Mike McDaniel is smart enough to know when to yank him from the game, because that's been the biggest hole in his game thus far as a coach. He's been one of the top coaches in the league since he came in 18 games ago. But knowing when to pull Tua is the one thing that he has screwed up consistently. So particularly if he takes a shot to the head, do the right thing and you know, get him out of there. But, you know, that aside, Miami could be the team to beat right now, particularly with Buffalo's vulnerabilities.
You know, what you bring up Mike McDaniel, like, I haven't seen a lot of him, but I've seen a few of his press conferences.
Yeah.
And he strikes me as a guy that could be moving on, like, you know, taking over the reins for some of the top head coaches we have right now. Like, in 5 to 6 years, I could see him being on top of that tree.
Yeah.
Because he has not only the personality, but I think he has, like, he's humble, but yet he's a leader. He's got like a little comedian of him, which is good. You know, you need that sometimes. Yeah. Take the heat off the team. So I think he's got a lot of the characteristics you're looking for as a CEO. I would almost say, not even a head coach, because that's what you are anymore. You know, you got your X and O guys a lot of times doing the other stuff, though he is the offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
But I mean, I really like. I think the arrow's going up. As long as he's there and they give him the necessary tools, they're always going to be a problem in the AFC.
I think so. And there was a thing that I saw last year. Andrew Hawkins was talking about, because he was his position coach with the Browns in 2014. You talk about dropped opportunities that the Browns could have promoted Mike McDaniel. But he was on the staff in 2014, and Hawkins had his best year in 2014. And he was talking about, and everybody thought he was crazy when he brought this out in the position room. But he had the guys doing a version of, I don't remember what it was. It was some kind of basketball move. I think it was maybe the crossover. He was having a watch like basketball guy, like point guards doing like a crossover move. I think that's what it was. And it was like, and that was what they were doing when they broke at the line, was they were doing that, and they were using it to get themselves open. And he was like, I remember he was on a TV show. I think the clip, he retweeted it last year. He was on a TV show in like 2019, and he's like, nobody's ever heard of this Mike McDaniel guy, but he was my position coach 5 years ago, and this guy's a genius. And he goes like, don't get me wrong. We all thought he was crazy. Like, we thought this guy absolutely crazy. And then we started trying what he was teaching us, and it was very unconventional, but it was working. So, yeah, I mean, Miami could very well be the team to beat coming out of the AFC. It depends on if Buffalo gets their issues figured out, how long it takes Burrow to get completely healthy, because that seems to be the Bengals' biggest issue. With the Bills, I think it's an issue with Josh Allen. Between the years, once again, another guy with this kind of issue, but also they've not committed to any kind of a running back situation here. They were in the mix supposedly for Dalvin Cook, but it never happened. They stayed with his lesser brother, and they're seeing what happens there. After going with Devin Singletary previously, I mean, come on. They've not had a legitimate running threat for years. And who's their number two receiver there? I mean, Gabe Davis? Doesn't necessarily have a lot to work with. I like Kincaid at tight end, but that seems more like a medium-term kind of a thing. So Buffalo's got more issues than I think a lot of us were looking at coming into the season. I had them winning the division but not going to the Super Bowl, but even that seems like it might be a little bit of a reach at this point. I think they're easily still a wild card team, but man, oh man, they're not where we thought they were heading into last year's playoffs, let's say.
Well, you know, when it comes to Josh Allen, I've actually changed a little bit over the last year or two. Now, before, I say a couple of years ago, I thought the hype was a little bit too much. Mm-hmm. You know, I liked him. And don't forget, that's when they had what they hit up. The Giants head coach is the OC.
Right.
And so I think that was a major factor in some of his success. The one thing I would say about Josh Allen is I honestly do feel he's a top three quarterback. You know, the thing is, like when you were talking about between the ears, you know, some of the people I talked to, you know, in football off the air, and the main thing I would say is always those two or three plays throughout a game where he makes those babbling mistakes, you know, that you almost ask yourself, why did you throw it there? Right. You know, like in the triple coverage, you know, and he's staring it down and he still does it. But with that being said, though, some of this stuff I have to put on the organization.
Yeah.
Because why would you, who's, like we said, who's his running back?
Yeah.
I mean, what's going on here? Who's his second receiver?
Right.
Who's his third receiver?
Yeah.
I mean, what, you know, this is a passing league here, Rick. I mean, right. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, some of the stuff, you know, hey, 2 years ago I would have been on the bandwagon with everybody else right now, Josh Allen. But I think it might be a little bit the other way. He doesn't have his original offensive coordinator. We see what he's doing at the Giants. Come on. I mean, he's doing a heck of a job there.
Right.
Not only as the head coach, but their offense, I think they're succeeding more than what they have. So you have to give him that much. And then when you take in that he doesn't have the offensive weapons, look, man, to me right now, I feel still Josh Allen's a top three quarterback without question.
Yeah.
And so my thing is, once again, okay, is he going to make some mistakes? Sure, he's going to make some mistakes. But why do you have him as your main running back? Come on, we've already seen this before with Cam Newton.
Yeah, and it's very interesting with Josh Allen being a mobile quarterback because it goes back to something that I had said as far back as the 2000s on the show. And in looking at it, and like realistically, I mean, this is just the way it is. Like 9 times out of 10 in the league, the mobile quarterbacks, the running quarterbacks, whatever, it's not obviously always synonymous with black quarterbacks, see Steve Young, but generally speaking it is. And I remember saying at the time when there was kind of a rap on some of the black quarterbacks in the league, it's a thing where I was like, the front offices seem to put too much on them. Like the fact that they can run as well as throw, like, oh, well, we don't need to get them a number one wide receiver. I remember talking about that in terms of, remember what it was like with Donovan McNabb before Terrell Owens got there? All the hot garbage they had circling in there to be his number one receiver. So it's like, this is like a commonality. At the time I was saying with black quarterbacks, but now I think it's more broadly true with mobile quarterbacks. You make that mistake of like, oh, we don't need to get this guy, you know, this kind of receiving depth. Yes, you do. Whoever your quarterback is, if you're trying to become a big-time winning organization, you need to have more than one big-time receiving threat. This should be basic, Ken Bex, but not everybody seems to know this.
Well, it kind of frustrates me as a purist of football. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? When you just look at a talent like Josh Allen, because Here's the thing. We're all getting robbed of his talent.
Yes.
You know, it's not just the Buffalo Bills and their fans. It's the NFL. And what I mean by that, I don't want him necessarily known as, like, 20 years from now, we go, oh, yeah, you remember that guy? I think he has the capability and the talent to be a Hall of Fame type guy, Rick.
Yes, he does.
Let's don't waste this, because I'm going to tell you something. Cam Newton should have been in the Hall of Fame.
Yes.
But, and you know, that we could do an hour talk on that, but the bottom line is, his most prominent receiver, other than Steve Smith when he was long on a tooth, was a tight end.
Yes.
I mean, what are we talking about? Who was his running back?
Yeah.
It was these has-been guys that, let's give him a third lick, and we think he might can still produce what he was supposed to when he came out of the draft. He's in his sixth year as a running back. You know what I mean? Come on. There is no projects from you're in your fifth, sixth year, and you're just going to, like, the hands of time are going to turn you into this rookie running back, and you're going to go for 2,500. Yeah, I mean, come on, Rick. What are we doing?
I don't know what it says about guys like me and you that if either one of us had like one of these magic bottles or whatever that a genie would come out of, you and I would probably use one of our three wishes on learning the secret to the universe of why these stupid GMs don't think they have to get weapons for a mobile quarterback. You and I would probably burn a question on that just so we could learn the answer.
You know, and while we're talking about that, Jalen Hurts, right?
Right.
I love me some Jalen Hurts. Sure. But let me see, who's his receivers? A.J. Brown? Now, look, I'm not taking away from him. But they work coincide here,
yes,
Rick.
They did for him what they're supposed to, which, by the way, if they hadn't screwed up and taken Jalen Reagor over Justin Jefferson, they wouldn't have had to get one of those two guys.
Well, I wish people would have got with me before the draft when Reagor came out, because I said he was like a special teams returner. But anyway, that's a whole other story.
Yes.
But,
yes.
You know, the one thing I'm looking at, you have to look at it this way. Mm-hmm. Would you rather defend – now, I honestly do believe that Josh Allen is a better quarterback potentially. No question about it, in my eyes, than Jalen Hurts. You see, I mean, come on.
Yeah.
If we're talking the raw, and I love Jalen Hurts. You know what I mean? I mean, he's definitely a leader. He taps out what he has. I like the guy. He is a Super Bowl type winning. But Josh Allen's a Hall of Fame type guy.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
That's two different type of levels here. And so, can we please get the guy? Look, he's going to what, his fifth, sixth year?
Yeah.
I mean, look here, Rick, you only got one or two more contracts, buddy.
That's
see what
it.
I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, he needs to get more weapons. But as you pointed out, Jalen Hurts, and that's the reason with that offense there. Again, Philly hasn't looked their best, but I still have them atop the NFC, and right now probably is a Super Bowl favorite sort of by default. I'm looking at it, and it's very interesting because you can go one of two ways on this here. The coming off of week one, a lackluster win on the road at New England. And so FDH Lounge dignitary Derek Joseph last week said on the show that he wasn't as impressed with them and was kind of down on them a little bit for that. And I said, okay, but hear me out on this. The Bills, the Bengals, the Chiefs all slipped on a banana peel week one. The Eagles went on the road, looked fairly lackluster, and came away with a win. There is something to be said for that. It's sort of like the pitcher in baseball, right? He doesn't have his best stuff. He is not throwing in the high 90s. He's only throwing 90 to 92, but he guts it out through six or seven innings and gets a win. That's kind of how I saw what Philadelphia did. And again, they haven't played their best football yet, but to me, that's a mark in their favor. Because you look at that roster, you look at what they're capable of doing. A little bit of discord there possibly right now with A.J. Brown. He's not happy about where he fits in with the whole thing. But unleashing DeAndre Swift week two, that's going to give them a real weapon because of how explosive he is. I mean, it's the Eagles, it's the Cowboys, it's the 49ers, and I'm not sure that anybody's really that close to the three of them right now.
No, I'm in total agreement with you when it comes to the Eagles. I mean, they have too much talent. Let's face it.
Yep.
I mean, there's just no way they're going to implode totally. They are in a tight division, so you have a couple of things. Here's the one equalizer: injuries, as we seen last night. I mean, you don't like speaking about it, but that's the one thing that can equal some things out here.
Yep.
Now, the one thing I would say, too, is another team that I'm looking at that's going to go on the upswing is the Chiefs.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they're going to get the tight end back. They're going to get the defensive tackle back. And let's face it, you know, they are a championship pedigree.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, they have guys, they have a number of guys that were rookies last year that won the Super Bowl that are coming back as second-year guys. So you're going to have a lot of maturity coming on that side of the ball. So I'm looking at the Chiefs coming back. Now, look, the wide receiver situation, I would say, yeah, I mean, I don't know what, you know, I mean, when it comes to Kadarius Toney, boy, I'll tell you what, he when he was coming out of Florida, I didn't say I said then he's not a traditional receiver.
Right.
He is a playmaker that he's what I would call, like I always call, a multi-back. Just get him the ball in space and let him do what he does. But when you're doing a game plan week on week, if you can't rely on him maybe lining up outside and designate him like that, if you have injury or something, that does hurt your offense. So you have to have them ex-receiver types along with the Kadarius Toney, because he's just not what I call a traditional receiver.
No, and here's the thing, too. They just, the surprise of week one was the degree to which, and again, I haven't been impressed with their wide receiving core since Tyreek Hill left, but it was kind of like, well, so what? They're doing it by committee. Oh, my gosh, the degree to which they got exposed without Travis Kelce. Like, they are in trouble if he goes down, and I would strongly submit they need to be buyers at the trading deadline. I don't know what wide receivers are necessarily going to be on the market, but they need to be out there looking for somebody, because I'll tell you what, this is it might sound shocking, but you could see the Chiefs go down wild card weekend if Kelce's not in the lineup. They are vulnerable, and they could win the Super Bowl again if he's in there. It's that big of a swing.
And, you know, I'm going to tell you, Kelce is a legitimate, he's a tight end, but he is like kind of a legitimate wide receiver.
Yes, very much
so. I mean, he is a top tight end, no question about it. But in my mind, he's a definite top 10 receiver.
Yeah.
Because you really can't guard him with a corner or a defensive back. And really, linebackers have no chance. So the bottom line is, I'll put it this way, he's an X-factor tight end, meaning there's really not much. If you put the ball where it's supposed to be, there's not much you can do with the guy.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, and he's making a run, and this is what's fascinating to watch. It's always fascinating, and it's rewarding to get to see these things play out. I mean, he's making a run at the greatest of all time. I mean, you think of the great tight ends previously, but, yeah, I mean, you look at what he did last year as such a difference maker on a Super Bowl team, doing it without Tyreek Hill, and, again, what he's poised to do moving forward here as well. I agree with you on the Chiefs. There were a lot of smart marks out there that were picking the Jaguars to go in and beat them this week. I think that's a little ahead of where the Jaguars are in their progression right now. They're the best team in a bad division. And speaking of a bad division, I'm going to call fraud on everybody that's saying...
Hold on, can I interject real quick?
Yeah,
there's something in my head. You said tight end.
Yeah.
And now, look, he might not be the best tight end of all time, but you know when I think of tight ends, you know who I wish I could bring back, actually, Rick?
Ozzy?
Mark Bavaro.
Oh, Bavaro, okay.
I love Mark Bavaro.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah,
dude.
That guy epitomized, you know, the yards after contact.
Yes. It was, man, the 80s were quite a time, weren't they, between him and Ozzy and Winslow. I mean, the 80s were kind of a golden era for the athletic tight ends there. And, yes, Bavaro was very much an unsung hero on those Giants Super Bowl teams. You are right about that. He was a big difference maker, and I think the fans of the blue and white probably justly celebrate him to this day. Again, I'm going to call fraud here on anybody that says that we were premature about the NFC South being awful. Because, again, I do think that New Orleans, Atlanta, Tampa Bay might have... I had them all as being poor teams coming up into the season. I'd put them basically maybe mediocre. I'd say the same thing with Washington being 2-0. But anybody that thinks that we were, like, premature and, like, not calling any of these teams legitimate playoff teams coming into the season, with the proviso that somebody has to win the NFC South. But basically, I actually had it as, like, Atlanta at 7-10, winning the South, getting a home game, and getting blown out, much like Tampa did last year. So I don't know that we've seen anything yet that makes me reconsider my point on any of these teams here. I was way down on Washington, more so than most people. I might be wrong about that. I had them. I thought they were going to be like the hideous team that nobody saw coming. I could see them being middle of the pack and in a bad conference, a really bad conference, which I think the NFC is depth-wise, potentially contending for a wild card. But I'm not reconsidering for the most part yet on Washington, Tampa, Atlanta, and New Orleans and saying that these are any of these are good teams. Do you disagree with me?
No, I mean, when you bring up the NFC South, the only thing I think about is New Orleans and maybe Derek Carr. And when you bring up Derek Carr, you're thinking just above system quarterback. So,
yes.
You know, I mean, and that's no disrespect to any of the teams in that division, but I don't even consider them for really, well, I guess, like you said, I guess somebody has to win the division. So,
right.
Other than that, the playoffs, that's the only thought I got. One team I was I'm a little perplexed about. I wasn't really high on them, so to speak. But the Giants, I mean, I know Saquon Barkley, I think last I heard, is going to be out for a couple of weeks. And so, that's going to put Daniel Jones in a situation. They already don't have a great wide receiver group. As we know, Darren Waller is not going to make it 17 weeks by his history.
Right.
So unless that defense is like just top six, they're definitely not going to be in the running when it comes to NFC East. And speaking of NFC East, Dallas is another team where I go, especially when you think of them on offense, what are they?
Yeah. I mean, it's a thing here, and I say this as a Brandon Cooks fantasy owner. I haven't played him in the first 2 weeks, but they haven't even had to rely on him yet, really, in any way. So, yeah, I mean, their offensive identity is a little bit in flux, but, they've got decent weapons kind of up and down the line there. Defensively, they've been better than I thought they were going to be because they're another team that I thought still had a few more holes than most people did. Thus far, it looks like I was overanalyzing the situation. But, the Giants, I saw a fall off coming, even though Daboll, again, much like what we said about Mike McDaniel before, I think Daboll is going to be one of the best coaches of this generation. But, again, I've never been a Danny Dimes guy. Look, they came back and beat the worst team in the league, Arizona, after spotting them like 30 points. Congratulations for that. So, I'm not impressed by what they did there. And
no, Arizona does have Joshua Dobbs.
Well, exactly, yeah. And, I'm a Tennessee Vols guy, but even I can't vouch for Josh Dobbs as a legitimate starting quarterback in the league at this point. So,
Well, when he was with the Browns, they kept bringing up how smart he was.
Yes, yeah. He's legitimately like a rocket scientist. Basically, and that always gave me a little bit of hope, was that it might help him with like processing the game, but I guess one doesn't necessarily. That's the reason Stephen Hawking never took up football, right? So, among others, but I will tell you, there's two teams where I had to kind of do a little bit of a Freaky Friday on with my predictions, because I had the Bears as like a stealth playoff team, and I thought that the Packers were going to fall off. And at this point, I've completely reversed myself on both of those two. That the Bears, again, much like the Bills, by memo to general managers, you do need running backs in this league. But their problems have gone beyond that. I was impressed that they filled a lot of holes in the offseason, but they didn't fill enough holes, with the backfield being one of them. Fields is starting to get to be at a point where it's now or never. We're starting to get to that judgment day on him. Meanwhile, with the Packers, Jordan Love has just been coming out, and like it's looking like it's the third guy on the line here. Favre to Rodgers to Love. I mean, if this team goes from like 92 into well into the 2030s, a 40-plus year run. By the way, they only have two Super Bowls to show for it so far, but I mean,
I was wondering if you were going
to
bring that up.
Yeah, I have to. But, like, no franchise has ever had a 40-year run with three guys back-to-back-to-back like that. And it's early to say, but if you're Green Bay, that's the standard you're going to be held to at this point. I'm sorry, you're not going to be held to the standard of Don Majkowski, with all due respect to him.
I like the Magic Man.
Magic Man was something, man. He gave him a spark. But you're going to be held to the standard of Bart Starr, Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers, and all you can say about Jordan Love so far is so far so good.
Yeah, and I think we're talking off air. He is definitely he has the requisite players around him, both on offense and defense. I mean, I love Watson. I like Romeo Doubs, you know, as a number two even. And yeah. I like Jalen Reed, you know, the rookie they got there. They had my number one guy coming out at tight end, and that's Luke Musgrave, which I think, you know, he's they talk about the kid over at Buffalo, but I really think he's got the most upside. So when you look at that, and then you look at the running game, you know, with Jones and Dillon, I mean – offensively, they got a good line. Not great, but good. And so we know they can run the ball. Okay. So, you know, I mean, as long as they can connect with the at least intermediate hit every now and then on the deep ball, you know, maybe with Watson, man, that offense could be somewhat dynamic. And that defense has is littered with number one draft picks. Not saying that that's everything, but at some point, once you congregate that much talent together, they had to be in the first round for a reason, Rick. Yep. You know what I mean? And so even if you don't hit on all 11, if you get 8 out of those 11, that should be at least a comparable defense. And then if they can get a playoff game in Green Bay, you know those weather conditions, anything can happen.
Yeah, very much so. And I think, it's going to be very, very interesting to see how it plays out. And the whole gamble of going with him over Aaron Rodgers, again, they're getting the last laugh on it at this point here. I will say, a team that has really been a surprise to me at this point, and I think a legit contender in the NFC, particularly as thin as they are depth-wise. Again, still stars and scrubs in a lot of ways, but the Rams are looking revitalized. Offensively, doing it with receivers we've never heard of before. Again, the Rams are just going out there. Again, that big week one upset over Seattle where they took it to them, going toe-to-toe with the Niners in a losing effort in week two that was still impressive. So the Rams, to whatever degree, I think as far as being a wild card team, are back. Now, whoever they play in the first round, Eagles, Cowboys, whoever, Lions, whoever it might be, I think is probably going to take them out, 49ers. But, I mean, just making it to the playoffs this year is a triumph for them after the cavern that they went into last year.
Yeah, I mean, you look over their roster and you wonder how they're doing it, to be quite honest with you. I mean, you got to give the coaching staff, I was listening to one podcast and they said McVay, with his wide receiver settings and what he's doing with the offense has been, like, off the charts. Right. And it must be because I see they have like a Tutu Atwell, which I remember coming out of Syracuse, which really, once again, he's not a conventional receiver. He's more like a weapon guy. Like I was saying earlier with Tony, he's not a conventional receiver that you can definitely line up in the X or what have you and, you know, do conventional stuff. He's more of a weapon. And so they got, I guess, a rookie over there. I didn't know much about Puka Nacua or something, I guess. Uh-huh. And I guess he's doing awesome. I haven't had a chance to follow up and see with him, but then you got a Van Jefferson, and so it's like, you know, how are they doing it?
And again, they're kind of replicating a couple of these guys what Cooper Kupp's been able to do in that offense, and he himself is an unconventional guy, and that he's mostly been a weapon out of the slot over a period of time there. So you've got them. You've got Detroit. They had a tough loss at home week two against Seattle, but it was a bounce-back game for Seattle. They showed they weren't as awful as they looked week one against the Rams. And so it's an interesting picture in the NFC. They don't have the depth, I don't think, that the AFC does as far as contenders. But again, bringing it back full circle on the conversation, even the AFC isn't as deep as we thought it was going to be coming into this because of the Browns and the Jets having their season-ending injuries there with Rodgers and Chubb. So
And if we can go back real quick, Rick, one thing I think it was week one that one of the more surprising losses for me was the Steelers, the way they lost to San Francisco.
Right.
It's not so much they lost. And I'm going to tell you, something's got to be going on over there because you really don't see the Steelers getting thwarted like that.
Yeah, well, I mean, Matt
Canada... And that wasn't due to injuries neither, Rick.
No, no, they just got exposed. I mean, I picked the 49ers to win. I was surprised they weren't laying more points, but I didn't think it would be the weapon that it was. And again, Matt Canada is awful. Kenny Pickett, for everybody in the preseason that was building him up, please.
The day of the system quarterback's over.
It is.
Put it this way. Kenny Pickett, if you had a category for system quarterback, he's a top tier.
Yeah.
But that puts you about, what, 18?
Well, he's like a homeless man's version of Kirk Cousins. I mean, you know.
What does that
get you?
You know? What was he, a six-year senior coming up?
I mean, Steeler fans are going to say that this is sacrilege, but it's like, is he that much different than, say, a Jacoby Brissett, who was actually fairly successful last year? Think about
it. You know what? I'll tell you what. I would probably take Jacoby.
I think I would, too. Yeah.
I would. We all know the limitations of Jacoby.
Of course.
But I remember that Brown season last year.
Yeah.
He maximized his ability.
Yes.
And some of the runs that he did, at first I was going, what are you doing?
Yeah.
But he did it. The third and ones he was converting.
Yep.
I mean, it'd be like a third and six. He'd spin out, get out, you know, out of the pocket.
Yeah.
Fake the pass. He's a good, smart, instinctive. He knows his weaknesses and strengths. Yes. I think that's what's important.
Yes. You know where
he plays within himself.
I agree with you, Kenny. They're both limited, but Brissett gets more out of what he has than Pickett does. I agree with that.
Yeah.
Give me the guy that gets the most out of what he has.
I think Pickett, what he's doing, he's letting his first round get to his mind, and he thinks he's got to be like a franchise quarterback going in year two.
Yeah.
No, what you need to do is play within your system. Maybe you need to get with the head coach and the offensive coordinator and say, hey, these are the plays that I know I can be successful on. Can we build off these plays? Period.
Yeah. Well, again, and if you're not going in the top 10 in the draft as a quarterback, that's the real dividing line. He went 20.
Yeah. What's that tell you? And he was like a six-year guy.
Yeah. So.
And I'm not trying to denigrate him, but, I mean, he's tapped out more or less, Rick.
He is. And, again, so they're lucky to be 1-1. The Browns unfailingly make them look better than they are every year and give them two undeserved wins every year, just like they did in week two here, but, you know.
Oh, another team I wanted to talk to you about real quick, Rick. The Raiders. Where are you at with them? Because I have no idea. You know, they'd be best probably, the NFC West?
Yeah.
No, the NFC.
They would rule the NFC South because, what?
Oh, man.
Coming into the year, I think I said 6-11. I look at them now, and it's like, they seem like the Raiders of the last decade, where you would say 8-9, 9-8, right? And that could be enough to joke their way in the AFC as they did a couple of years ago, only to get exposed by Cincinnati. But, yeah, I mean, it was part of it was, again, we didn't know if Garoppolo was going to be good to go right off the bat. He has been. And that provides a certain floor. You've got a relatively decent floor in there with Garoppolo. Not a great ceiling.
He's above a system quarterback. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He might be just below like a Cousins, but definitely above a system quarterback.
Yeah.
He's like in that gray area.
He is. And then defensively, that's another team that I think has too many holes to really threaten anybody that much. So they could be a middle of the pack team. They're another team that I thought was going to be a poor team that could be middle of the pack. So, you know, they're an interesting team. As we're looking at this 2 weeks in, are there any other teams we haven't talked about yet that are making an impression on you one way or another?
You know what? I'm not on the bandwagon. I'm not crazy about the team myself. But I'll tell you, going 2-0 for Atlanta.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what their schedule is or nothing like that, but they do have some talent on offense. And, you know, if the quarterback can, you know, once again, play within his means.
Yeah.
Here's another thing. I think the organization has to understand what that quarterback is, too. Rick. I mean, yeah, you know, like, put it this way. If I had the Atlanta quarterback, then darn it, we're going to run the ball.
Absolutely. And they're doing it with Robinson and Algier. They're running it a lot. Ritter, I don't think, is going to be the answer going forward there. See Kenny Pickett. But, you know, again, they're using him for what it's worth. And, you say you haven't seen much about the schedule the rest of the way. I will tell you, spoiler alert, Ken, they do play 5 more games against the worst division in football.
Wow. Well, I'll tell you, if they took that kind of and their head coach, Arthur Smith, is this tight. If they took that running approach, like more old school.
Yeah.
And maybe even insert, I know this is sacrilegious these days, but insert that legitimate fullback.
Yeah.
And I mean, you think about the play action passes they could do and implement Kyle Pitts like that. I'll tell you what, man, if they could get Ritter to play within the offense that they're trying to design, if he can be efficient, you know what I mean? Hit the underneath, to intermediate passes and be accurate. I'm telling you what, man. I don't know about the defense. It seems like they got a lot of older vets. Maybe they might be good. I don't know. But if that offense can do that with that running game and maybe implement the fullback, which, like I said, is sacrilegious these days, I mean, they can really maybe make some noise, Rick.
Well, here's the funny thing to a couple of historians like me and you about what you just said here. You go back 30 years, and they were zigging when everybody else zagged then, because the chuck and duck that they were doing was like a precursor to today's offense. So they were going against the grain in the 90s with Bert Emanuel and everybody else. Now they'd be going against the grain again if they do what you're talking about and play power football with the fullback. Like, they have a chance to really go against the grain twice. They didn't have a whole lot of success in the 90s doing it that way, being ahead of where the game was as far as the spread offense and everything like that. Then again, they were in a tougher division at the time. They're not in a tough division this year. And again, that running game, they are zigging when everybody else zags as far as, again, they're committed to using Tyler Algier a lot too and really leaning on the running game. But if you got a 1-2 punch like Robinson and Algier and you don't have much of a quarterback, then that's absolutely what you should be doing.
And as long as Ritter can be efficient,
just, you know what I mean?
I'm talking about precise. I'm talking about what the handoffs, you know. Let's don't be blowing timeouts. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And if he can really be that guy, I mean, who knows this year?
Well, but the thing of it is, though, too, as far as getting that guy, and again, next year's draft is supposed to be a pretty good one for quarterbacks, but it's like, if you're the Falcons and you win this division, and you're going to be like in the middle of the first round next year, as far as what you'd have to do to trade up, it sort of strikes me as sort of like where the Chicago Bulls are in the NBA right now. Like, they're the 7th seed every year, it feels like. And it's like they're never going to get the difference maker players in the draft because they're just eking into the playoffs. And it's like, if the Falcons eke into the playoffs, how do they get the replacement for Desmond Ridder next year? That's what I wonder about.
Here's another thing, though, too, Rick. Let's rewind a little bit. Why didn't they make the move for the quarterback last year?
I know. And that's where, look, I mean,
Robinson was what, a second round, third round? I mean,
yeah. And
so,
like,
who cares?
And listen, Robinson is a great player and going to be a difference-making bell cow back in this league. I truly believe that. But it's one of those things where, even if you got to do the Mike Ditka thing and give up, like, the rest of your draft, you know what I mean?
Get that
quarterback.
Look at it this way, too. Look at somebody like Kyle Pitts. He's got a shelf life.
Yeah.
You can't keep blowing these years. I mean, these are quality years here, Rick. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And we know he's a difference maker. You just gotta put the fuel in the car and let him run.
Yeah. Well, I think somebody's had sugar in the gas tank with him so far because he hasn't been showing it yet. But, you know,
it's... Well, a couple of years ago, I took a flyer on him as a rookie, and he killed me.
Listen, he still has the skills and the upside and the ability to make it happen at some point. You're right about that. I mean, there's a minimum of 20 teams in this league that would take him as their starting tight end right now because of his upside. So I'm not disagreeing with you on that. But, you know, yeah, it's... As people have been able to tell from this discussion, there was a reason that I brought you on. A, because it's always great talking football with you, Ken Bex. But beyond that, the first 2 weeks of this season have been, maybe, I don't mean to be prisoner of the moment, but I think a little bit more interesting than usual as far as some of the things that they've taught us versus what we thought coming into the season. I think it's been revelatory in a lot of ways 2 weeks in.
I'll tell you what, maybe we should do a follow-up, like, say, maybe week 8. Because yes. I think a lot of this smoke is going to be cleared up by then.
Yes, yes. We're definitely going to be doing more of these things during the season here, and possibly maybe do a round table and pull in one of our other dignitaries to talk with you, give you a chance to mix it up with some other members of our crew here as well. We'll have to revisit this going forward here, but Ken Bex, the scout, always a pleasure. People need to check out your work at firstdownscouting.com, the number one, stdownscouting.com, one of our greatest FDH Lounge dignitaries. Thank you so much, buddy. I can't tell you how much fun. You know I have fun talking football with you always.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I tell you, if I ever needed anybody to put me out of hype, man, I tell you what, nobody ever does my website like you do.
Well, I appreciate that, man. We got to be there for each other, man. That's what the 21st Century Media Alliance is all about. And, you know, pleasure to be in it with you, my man. And pleasure to have you in the FDH Lounge. Thank you so much. And thank you, everybody, for checking out our breakdown of NFL Week 2 here with FDH Lounge, mini episode 1657.